Hello and welcome to the Decibel Boost Podcast monthly album roundup for the month of March 2020. Oh, where are my manners? My name is Rob, and I'm one of your hosts. And with me, I have...
Has it really been a month? It feels like 72 years.
And...
It's been so long. I feel like going to a white beard. No, no, it's not white beard. No, it's just regular beard. But it's not white. It's just, well, it's damn.
Oh, man, I'm going to ask Santa for my Christmas gifts early.
I'm pretty sure no phone got...
They're shut down, too.
Aw, man. I can't believe Christmas is canceled because of the coronavirus. Then again, this was inevitable. They already canceled Easter. That's right, Jesus. This year, you stay dead.
Yeah. Much to the chagrin of a certain asshole in charge.
Yeah. But, you know, grandma needs to die so your stock portfolio can improve. That's the most important thing.
Last chance to evacuate planet Earth before it is recycled.
But as we wait for the inevitable plague death of all humankind, we still got music to discuss here. And of course, with the plague rearing its ugly head, speaking of plagues, I don't know if it's because of the plague. Well, some of it's because of the plague or just a weird coincidence, but there were a lot of shadow drops this month. Like a lot.
Yep. Yeah. Huh? Makes it kind of hard to keep track of all this stuff.
Yep.
Yeah, I probably didn't even catch all of them in this list. But, you know, some of them are pleasant surprises, and some of them are... Well, I wouldn't know, because I'm not insane enough to listen to friggin', like, two albums worth of Lil Uzi Vert.
Oh.
But we will get to that in due time, presumably. Or maybe just mention it in passing, I don't know. Anyway, so let's, of course, get into our usual business for this past month, starting with what actually did come out in March of 2020. Starting in the rock Indian folk section, there was the newest album from Waxahachie with St. Cloud. The newest project from Peter, Bjorn, and John. All three of them? In this economy? Really? With Endless Dream. There's Noel Gallagher's fucking... Actually, no, that's an appropriate name. Noel Gallablaga, because who cares? Gallbladder. Blue Moon Rising. Fuck you and your birds. They work for the bourgeoisie. Anyway, there was the newest project from Silverstein with A Beautiful Place to Drown, and the newest album from Pearl Jam with Gigaton. Now starting off in the metal and hardcore section, we had the newest project from Body Count with Carnivore, the newest album from My Dying Bride with The Ghost of Orion, the newest album from In This Moment with Mother, the newest album from metalcore act Invent Animates with Grayview, we had a shadow drop from Old Man Gloom with Seminar 9 Darkness of Being, the newest album from French metal act Igor, 3 R's, with Spirituality and Distortion. The newest project from Mirrorcore with Folk Assange. The new Heaven Shall Burn album of Truth and Sacrifice. The new Stitched Up Heart album Darkness. And the newest album from Code Orange with Underneath. Now moving on to the realms of hip-hop and R&B. We had the newest album from Knowledge with 1988. We had two projects from Lil Uzi Vert with Eternal Attake and Lil Uzi Vert vs. The World 2. There was a new EP from Megan Thee Stallion with Suga. After however many years of wait, the debut project from Jay Electronica with A Written Testimony. We had the newest album from Party Next Door with Party Mobile. Don Toliver with his debut album Heaven or Hell. Conway the Machine and The Alchemist dropping a collaborative EP with Lulu. The frequent award winner of Worst Album Covers as dished out by Crash Thompson, Swamp Dog, with the new album Sorry You Couldn't Make It. Sorry, Swamp Dog. There was a new Joyner Lucas project, ADHD, and a shadow drop of the fourth and presumably final album from Childish Gambino, 3/15/20. Now in the general realm of pop and electronic, there was the new Nobody Cares Moby album with All Visible Objects. There's a new album from synthpop act Little Dragon with New Me Same Us. A new album from Phantogram with Ceremony. Two shadow drops courtesy of Nine Inch Nails with Ghosts 5 Together and Ghosts 6 Locusts. The newest album from Fortet with 16 Oceans. the new album from Neil Horan with Heartbreak Weather, the new J Balvin project Colores, the new 5 Seconds of Summer album Calm, the new Adam Lambert album Velvet, the newest album from Alicia Keys, Alicia, and the newest project from R&B Bad Boy The Weeknd with After Hours. So, yeah, certainly didn't stop the music industry from releasing all sorts of projects amidst the plague. So, let's just, you know, try to get into this music to take our minds off how everything is shit. So, as always, we get things started with Mr. Alex over here. You have the floor.
Okay, and I don't have a whole lot to get to. I just have here in total six albums, if we're being particular about it. But first, I need to give my condolences to Joyner Lucas. Nobody died or anything. I just want to give it to him.
Oh.
Oh my god, he sucks. Ugh. Fucking no talent hack. Anyway, ouch. Speaking of people who are talented, I'll start with this surprise drop from Mr. Donald Glover, Childish Gambino. Which, funny story, it was actually uploaded to a website. 12 hours later, it vanished, and then like a couple days later, it came back up on all the platforms. It's weird. I don't get why, but 3/15/20. I'm not sure if this is going to count as the fourth album, considering it was just here it is, but I guess time will tell, and I'm sure y'all have more to say about this one than me, so I'll keep this short and sweet. Algorithm sounds like the song from the game Drunken Robot Pornography, if anyone knows what that game is all about. It's very weird and very fun. And Time feels like what happens if and when the robots really do take over and Ariana Grande turns into some kind of weird Vocaloid thing.
It can happen sooner rather than later at this rate.
Yeah, I mean, we are just a couple years away from Ghost in the Shell finally being realized. I'll be the first to sign up for that. And the rest of the album here, it just sort of plays out like a robot dance hall rave soundtrack. A little too heavy on the bass, though. Oh, and hey, Feels Like Summer. It's finally on an album. Neat, I guess. I don't know.
It's felt like so long ago.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an okay album. Wouldn't call it a 4, Fantano, but whatever.
Damn.
Yeah, okay. Next up here, Folksange from Mirkur. Hope I said all those right. Now, black metal turned into Scandinavian folk music. Well, I don't like black metal, and I'm kind of on folk music, so what the hell? Let's see what this gives me. And 40 minutes later, I can say this is an album I feel more appreciation toward more than enjoyment. I like it for what it is. It's an array of folk tracks with lots of strings and booming drums accompanying her very wonderful voice. But it's not something that I could describe as for me, if that makes any sense.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I see it as more of an art piece and something I would go back to with regularity, but it's a me thing. What is amazing, though, is this Body Count album, Carnivore. And it's a good thing this came out, because otherwise I would have had to listen to that freaking Code Orange album, which I didn't want to do. Hey, I wrote my one piece for the month, even though the piece in question got delayed, but it still counts for my March quota, so, you know, whatever. So yeah, Ice-T and his crew are back for another barrage of hardcore metal with Carnivore. And it's filled with some wonderful treats of Fuck the Police that we've come to know and appreciate over the years. And this time, Riley Gale from Power Trip is on board with that motif on Point the Finger.
Nice.
Fantastic. And another such track is also fantastic with that motif is Bum Rush. It's a track that lays down both FUs to the police and to the certain fuckface and clown shoes in charge.
We know.
Fried bologna sandwich does not care about your strive for perfection. Just eat the fucking sandwich. Okay, anyway. Much like their last album, we have another cover song here. And this time it's a pretty solid rendition of the Motorhead classic Ace of Spades, along with an Ice-T cover of Colors from 1988. Pretty alright. And much like their last album, we have additional features. Thankfully not Dave Mustaine. This time, Jamie Josta is back on another level. And we have Amy Lee of Evanescence on When I'm Gone, a tribute to Nipsey Hussle. Worked out pretty well. And if we can use this as a replacement for that ungodly, cheesy Charlie Puth See You Again song, then we'll be doing something really good in this world.
Please.
Seriously.
God's love, make it happen.
I'm tired of hearing that song at every funeral. Of course, this whole album, it's a raw, emotional battering ram that's full of the textbook body count elements we all know and love. You know, fuck racism, fuck the police, fuck vegans. Not me saying that, it's them. And fuck you, you're gonna die real slow. Like on the track No Remorse. Not a Metallica cover, it's their own song. Yeah, really good listen. This next one, I wanted to write about. I found it kind of difficult to write about 2+ hours of ambient noise music, so consider this my mea culpa. Nine Inch Nails, Ghost 5, and Ghost 6. Surprise, we got 2 Nine Inch Nails albums for free, which is always awesome, because who needs labels nowadays anyway?
Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
And you're young.
As a pair of ambient albums set to serve as a soundtrack score of sorts to this whole situation we find ourselves in, I honestly never thought I'd say thank you, Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross, for helping me get through this whole thing a little bit easier. But listening to it, it gave me that pesky conundrum. How do I talk about a double album of ambient soundscapes other than it's good, so get it for free, listen to the whole thing with the lights turned off? A little bit difficult to do, because sometimes it just doesn't work out. So I have like half a dozen scrapped ideas anyway, but whatever. I guess I can explain the concept for this whole thing like this. Ghost 5 together is more of the optimistic and assuring half of this package. 70 minutes of sonic textures with a softer impact on the ears, often blending airy synth strings with a subdued bass line and piano keys, like on the tracks Your Touch and Hope We Can Again, while also supplying the score to a listless and hollow cityscape on Letting Go While Holding On. Kind of like what most cities are feeling nowadays. Unless you're in Florida.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ron DeSantis, you're a fucking idiot, too. But this also does build a crescendo of what will hopefully be our all-clear moment on the closer, still right here, while also leaving things on a doubtful presence with a more subdued closing moment that leaves with the question, we made it, so now what do? We form a new normal, that's what we do. That's when the second half comes into play. Ghost 6, Locusts. It paints a picture of morose dread, creating a soundscape of what if we don't get out of this? The opening track, The Cursed Clock, is kind of creepy in parts. It's just a looping piano line that feels right out of a horror movie than anything else with its structure and that's the mood it carries all throughout. Its creeping presence on tracks like Your New Normal, Turn This Off Please, and So Tired, they all carry through with elements of fear, dread, worry. You know, everything we're trying not to feel right now. Musically, there are elements of D&B in place, like on Run Like Hell, and of course, noise rock on When It Happens, Don't Mind Me. And the airy synth presence of the previous half are present here as well, but in a much darker picture of what could very well be our new normal unless we all collectively work to stop this whole thing. Ron and various other quote-unquote leaders who are doing just a crackerjack job out there by, you know, being idiots in front of the camera. Ron.
The state.
Yeah. It's terrible. But as for this package here, I gotta say, this is probably some of the best work I've heard from Nine Inch Nails in quite a long time. Came out of nowhere. It's, on one hand, kind of soothing to the ears. On the other hand, kind of horrifying. That's kind of what I like. I'm not too heavy in the, you know, super shrill and, you know, peaking kind of noise rock. But stuff like this, I'm really into. I'm not sure we're going to get more of this kind of Nine Inch Nails stuff anytime soon, because, again, this came out of nowhere, just randomly one day. Here you go, two albums for free. Yeah, it was a very pleasant treat to see pop up. And I'm kind of glad for it. I do have one more album on here, but I think I'm going to save that one for a little bit later. And by the end of this, you'll all know what it is.
The suspense is killing me. You know, besides oxygen poisoning. But anyway, with that out of the way, now we move on to the second part of our podcast. Time for Mark to give us his highlights and lowlights and everything in between. So, you have the floor, man.
Yeah, so this month has been, a lot this month. Even though I use music to, you know, help me calm my nerves from all the impending doom and bullshit that happens. I have about 9 albums, well, 10, but, well, you know what's coming up next, but yeah, I have about 9 albums to talk about for this month. And since March is Women's History Month, I think the first 4 acts we're talking about are, well, fronted by women. Let's just say that.
Got it.
First one being Fantagram with the new album Ceremony. Now I admit I now know much about Fantagram, aside from the fact that yes, we know we could declare with big boys with big grams, and these are their singles like from this and last year. And you know, like I know that they got that very, that pop sound, that very experimental pop with the fingers of the Chaka album. And yeah, that's what I got from this album. A very pop, very electronic-y pop album, which I kind of dug the sound of it. Like, it does sound very bombastic. It sounds like it got some very good energy on it. The vocals sound nice. And, all right, and everything just sounds cool. This sounds cool. Like, I know we talked about, the singles, which I want to say I think 6 singles have been released due to the cycle, even though it's an 11-track album, I think I might have heard half the album in passing. I don't know. That's just me. But yeah, like, I have no qualms with this album. Like, all right, I did the sound. I like the songs like Love Me Now or Let Me Down. And of course, some singles, they're all cool. Like, I think in the happiest single, or, like I said, there's been, they did a ton of singles before this album came out. But I'm saving that for later on. I'm not gonna have much to say on these albums, just like a little bit or so. But yeah, I'm gonna say this album, this Fantagram album, is alright. It's pretty decent. I like what I hear. So yeah, let's go with that. Next album, and since you mentioned Fuck Labels, look at this latest EP from Meg Thee Stallion for Sugar.
That
fucking shit, damn, man. But I will say, like, first listen to a Meg Stallion project, I listened to a little bit of her last I listened to a little bit of it last time. I didn't get to it in full, but yeah, like, what I got from here is like basically what I got from her from her usual rapping. Like, yeah, I got some, she brought some balls at them, that the beats were banging. Like, she got some good bangers on here. And I like this one track called BITCH it's like a remake of Wanna Be Your Nigga by Tupac, but it's like in the inspiration of Omega, like, you know, her, her, her be the woman. What the chorus goes, I'd rather be a B-I-T-C-H. I'm gonna keep it real with you because that's good. It's gonna come in anyway when I'm tripping anyway. You can't, you know, you can't control me. You know, you need to ruin your life, like that type of shit. Like I'm, because like I'm like I'm like I'm be what I want to be. You can't control me anyway. Like that shit, like that. You know, like as she says, real hot girl shit. And yeah, she is. Yeah, she is doing that hot girl shit over here. And yeah, I gotta say like that. This little project, it got some good moments on it. Like. And of course, it's very short and sweet. You got songs like "Savage," "Ain't Equal," all right. There's some good ones, and you got some little features. You got some small features. Like you got okay, there's Kalani, all right, and there's Gunna. Okay, okay, it gets easier. I mean, he's on the hook. I didn't care, but he's done it there. But yeah, this project is put this up to what Megan. We'll hear from her. We'll hear from, what would be her, her previous projects that will be her on the Cypher. But yeah, this is a pretty good project. I just hope the whole label situation got, I don't know why her rush by, but yeah, I hope the situation got, not as fucked up as it got, but yeah, just so this shit got cleared up or something. Okay, Next up, new album from Little Dragon. Yes, the band, I just love to praise every fucking time, cause that's just me. We have a new me, same us. And I gotta say, like I said, I got nothing much new to say about this, man. It is what I'm known for, although I will say this album is a bit more, funkier and more whimsical, which I need, cause I need whimsy shit. I need whimsy shit, and it sounds very jazzier, funkier. Like, okay, give me funky. Like, it got some very very bouncy songs. Very bouncy songs. Like, you got songs like, Hold On, or Hold On, Every Rain, New Fishing, Are You Feeling Sad, which we'll say during that little spot of that month, which I kind of feel, let's see, more depressed, scared, kind of, scared considering I'm an essential worker that has to work in a county that's getting more and more cases by the end, more cases by every day, because people don't know how to fucking stick inside. Okay, I'm getting a point. One thing is, this album cheering up a bit. And I need that cheering up a bit. The instrument is great. I still love the vocals that, You Keep Knocking Don't Always Give Us, and You Keep Knocking Don't Always Give Us, this album is just fucking great. It's just good. Like, yeah, I really, yeah, this was a smile to my face. So yeah, definitely a recommendation. And another album, which we kind of almost forgot, Toki Monster.
Oh shit.
Her album came out with Oasis Nocturno. That's the album with the single one with the Earth Gang joining on the Friday for the Night. And I'll say this, well, like the last album, like I was feeling the last album, and I felt this as well. We'll say it does have a bit. There is some more upbeat shit, to it. Like, you got, like I said, there's this one track called Get Me Some, which features vocals from Drew Love and Found Dumb Dead, which, that track was actually I enjoyed that a lot. She got your upbeat checks. It got some more, she always had, upbeat checks. There's some, moodier shit. I will say it's less moody than her last album. Although, I kind of get why her last album was more moodier, considering the fact that, since I've read that, I think, before that last one was made, she had to go on the brain, surgery for, Moya, a rare brain condition. Which she can't understand, which she lost her ability to understand speech and music, which that must have been real fucked up for her. Like damn. And now that she passed that, it was like, oh yeah, this has more of a better glue to it, and yeah, I guess you say that. All right, like I say, I dug this a lot. I dug this slightly the same as I did last album. It's still a good listen, and you know, it, yeah, like I say, it's worth recommending. I definitely say that. I'll check it out. And I get another releases. This is gonna be real short. Yeah, I'm gonna keep this one short because I listened to this the least, not because of I didn't want to, because I didn't have time. Yeah, I listened to Childish Gambino album 3:15:20, and yeah, like it ain't okay. Look, it's not a four. It's not. But we'll say I haven't gone back to it as much as I did. I mean, yeah, the hype was there because I've been hyped about it, but after that, it sort of went away. I think to me, it's like the melt, last year's launch made album called When I Get Home. Some people thought, okay, it was good, but some thought, like, yeah, there's intentions there, but, like, the songwriting is kind of meh. To me, like, I like When I Get Home, but this one, to me, like, 3:15:20. I felt that as other people felt about When I Get Home, except I get why most people didn't get from the songs I did. Like, the album is still decent. Still get some good instrumentation. Like, some songs sound fine. Some fun. The features with Ariana Grande, SZA, and 21 Savage, they sound fine. They sound fine. It's still good and all, but I'm pretty much not good. I'm pretty much saying, it's not much worth replay value. I mean, it's hype. I wouldn't go to it again, but it's an album that maybe I should have got to a lot more. Maybe I would have. Oh, but I don't know. It's just maybe the hippie one needed it right now. But it's fine. It's whatever. Next up, we got Knowledge with 1988. It's not. So what do you expect? You get the good lo-fi hip hop soul style with instrumentals that sort of shit. And even though it has 20 to 27 tracks, it don't feel as long as 20-something tracks. I will say this on there: you get a Lost No Worries track on there, and it's a fact. Mexico. I think it might be like a. And a cut that I think didn't make it to the Lost World and to the No Worries album, which okay, I didn't expect this here. There's a pack on this. Now can y'all make another No Worries album? If y'all can, because you kind of need it now. The streets need it right now. I mean, these empty ass streets, but please, but yeah, we need it though. I've always got those good, nice soul sounding beats, which, alright, I'm fucking with this. I'm really fucking with this. Now we got Condor Machine and the Octopus for Lulu. And yes, you put those comments together, it's like, I like this. And yeah, I like this. The guy mixed Griselda Alchemist. It was a good present. And I still say the joke with Scuba Q. It still hits. And of course, you got that song Calvin, which, okay, that song Calvin was good too. Like, you get 7 tracks. Just, you know, like 22 minutes. Imagine 23 minutes. Again, that's the length of a single anime episode. You can just play that while, I don't know, playing the latest episode of, well, what anime that's actually streaming now and not affected by the thing, but fuck it. A good listen, and you need a dose of Griselda and Alchemist since he's been killing a lot lately. There you go. And now, I got some lowlights. Mainly 2 lowlights. And here's one that I want to like, but it doesn't do much for me. So, Mr. J. Electronica. No, I've just heard him. Yeah, I've just heard him do this one, maybe to that one Exhibit C, that one check Exhibit C, which I heard before during that one Boondock Season 3 trailer, or at least unofficial trailer, which, all right, that joint was kicking. I'm like, yeah, he'd be interesting, except it took him 10 fucking years to make an album.
Wait, that's how long ago that was? Holy shit.
Yeah. That long. And so 10 years later, he now got an album, an official album, Sound of Rock Nation. Sound of Rock Nation. I can say, well, this is like a decent Jay-Z album. Wait, what?
Huh?
Yeah, him and, yeah, Jay-Z appears on this more than once. He's basically one of the center highlights of the album, or I'm gonna say is Jay-Z was the better Jay in this album than Jay Electronica.
Damn.
And maybe because, I don't know, he's an interesting rapper, because Jay Electronica, I don't know, like, I get what he's talking, like, I get what he's going on about, like, I know he's, like, he does have a lot of, you know, religious themes concerning the album cover has these, you know, Muslim hieroglyphics, like, that type of shit, which, okay, if you're into that, that's cool, like, I don't know, there's a lot of religious themes to this shit, at least the lyrics that I've read into, which, okay, I mean, you get some Black Excellence at, best, which, okay, Black Excellence, okay, I like that, but something to get kind of, you know, you heard the word Hotep, right? Meaning, you know how annoying they can be, right? Sort of in the line of that, maybe because I'm not a big Jay Electronica fan, because I only heard him either do that one song or that other song, which, like, you heard that one song Control, right? That one song where Kendrick Lamar killed that verse, and oh yeah, Big Sean was there too. Oh yeah, Jay was there too. That's what Blippi is. Like, I mentioned that once. Yeah, that's what Blippi is on this album. Like, yeah, he's there, and but I don't know. It's like, I mean, he's there, but I don't know. He's not really feeling that much in there. Like, I guess he had a JD because it's like, to me, when, like, on those Wu-Tang albums, like we get a Ghostface or a Raekwon solo album, one of those two are going to be there anyway. It's like, we hear Ghostface, you will hear Raekwon, we hear Raekwon, you hear Ghostface. The difference is, I like those two rapping together. They'd be like, alright, I'd be listening to this, but with Jay and, well, Jay, it's like, I don't know, like, I mean, there's some songs I do like. I mean, I like Ghost of Soulja Slim and Never Ending Story. But that's about it. I mean, production was alright at best. I mean, there's some production tweaks that I kind of like, but some just feel kind of, well, dated. I mean, considering you have one song that is 10 years old on there. I think it's called Shiny Shit. I know it's called something Shiny. The damn title. It was called Shiny Suit Theory. Yeah. A track that's been 10 years old, which has the dream on there. Yeah, that the dream. I guess I was just disappointed because I figured, maybe he might be in genre, but it's like, no. I just didn't care.
So basically what you're saying is, like, 10 years later and this is all we get.
Yeah. And I mentioned that, it's all 10 tracks and 30 something minutes. Like, okay, at this time, we don't want an overlong ass album, which, okay, that would have been worse, but, I mean, just feel like, well, it kind of needed, I don't know, something more, or I don't know, maybe it needed to be retooled or something. But I tell you this, he's not as boring as this other album, this last album. And you know what one of them is. Yes, I would have boarded the Uzi train.
Ah,
why would you do that to? Why would you do that to yourself?
I need something to be riled up. I need something to be riled up, or at least have a pulse. At least have a pulse. I'd rather get riled up over stupid shit than, well, they being the press. But yeah, okay, yes, listen to Eternal Take, just that one. I did not listen to Little Weeks vs. the World because I'm not that savage. Because, well, my feelings on this album is basically what I feel on this last album, Love is Rage 2. Which is like, okay, this what y'all like? Like, I don't know, like, okay, I'm gonna say right now, it's a slog, it's fucking boring. Like, look what, like, the dude, like, you can say he has good form and all, but he ain't saying nothing that's impressive. It's like, you can go like, something, something, but it's like, I don't care. And, well, I think the only interesting song, the only track you got in there is that one song, You Better Move, because it's simple, that pinball game. It's like, he fucking simple, the pinball game. Like, okay. I mean, that's the one thing I say about you, but other than that, like, his bars aren't that good. His repetition is more lazy than catchy. It's like, and speaking of lazy, the one song, P2, it's basically a retread of EXO Tour Life. It's like, you didn't do nothing to it as much. You just maybe tweaked it a bit, but it's like, but ain't nothing that's different. But it's like, I hear the beat. It's what I heard over 2 years ago. Wait, no, 3 years ago. Three years ago, and it's still not that good. And yeah, I don't know. It's like, the track is, I also see more on the ones, like, it's into the same shit. And we'll say the one feature he get, well, we'll say, basically, I didn't listen to the other one, because it's like, I don't know. He got all these, like, the other one got all those blind features, and the only feature he got in this was that Miss Sid the Kid, which, okay, so. She worked with him and Taco worked with Lil Dicky. Okay, that's okay. Y'all just picking a bunch of. Okay, so I gotta make y'all money. Like, yes, but. Yeah, nah. This album, it ain't good. There you go. May I have to say, but is there much to say about this album? There isn't.
Ouch.
Some in on that.
Yeah, so that finishes up Mark's thing there. Your gift basket for taking that bullet is in the mail. Happy Easter.
Yeah. Oh boy.
But yeah, time to get into my stuff. As always, we start off with my top picks. These first two have been mentioned already, so I'm going to kind of cover them just a bit briefly. First off, of course, the new Knowledge album, 1988. This is definitely the type of soulful, you know, R&B, gospel, hip-hop, vibey shit that I need to keep me from going completely insane during this whole quarantine. You know, you get a lot of dreamy synths and, you know, those kind of grooving drums on songs like, you know, Don't Be Afraid or Because Tomorrow's Not Promised. Of course, there's a lot of this ethereal looping choppy piano, this really chill keys and grooving bass line on Learn. The song How to Cope, with a lot of clattering percussion and those gospel vocals, feel kind of very, almost kind of Flying Lotus-ish, if I can talk. And yeah, that's basically the album in a T. It's just one of the best, like, beat records you could listen to, including a lot of, you know, the good vocal samples in there too. And I just want to point out, I like the message that's spelled out by the, you know, song titles. It feels like a very comforting thing to see in this, you know, good old time. I'm not going to recite the whole thing here. You can just look it up on Spotify. But yeah, that is a message right there. It's very spiritual in a way. Kind of like the sound of the album itself. And the other one here, one that we've all already mentioned here, Childish Gambino with 3:15:20. Seriously, a 4? It's not that bad. Supposedly, I'm going to take this as the final Childish Gambino. I'm supposedly, like, unless we get any sign that something else is happening on the road. And yeah, you know, this is certainly, as expected from charting the progress from album to album of his, quite the swerve. as soon as you hit the first major song, Algorithm, which kind of has that aggressively moody tone with the vocals in the verse coated in synthetic distortion, this very kind of almost aggressive before it goes into sort of more, you know, melodic sort of thing. It's very moody and groovy in a way that almost kind of feels like if Nine Inch Nails ever produced a Weekend track. More on that later. There's the song Time, which has this kind of chorus-laden guitar rhythm that sounds very tropical when paired with the auto-tune vocals and, of course, the backing choir vocals. And, yeah, even though this track has vocals from Ariana Grande as well, for some reason she's uncredited, I guess to keep with the ambiance and the mystery of everything. As you can tell from the fact that most of the song titles here are just timestamps. So, congratulations, bootleggers who upload albums to YouTube. Your job for timestamping is already done for you. So, like, you have the song 1238, for example. This kind of vibrant track with really humorous lyrics about Gambino taking shrooms to impress a girl, going on a really weird trip. It's pretty funny. And then there's that random swerve where 21 Savage raps about police brutality. Huh. And yeah, a lot of the album, again, it's very R&B and soul-laden, almost like Awaken My Love, but with a distinctly more synthetic, modern, kind of avant-garde bent. Like, 2419 has layers of these wildly charismatic vocals, belting out these weird declarations of love, along with a lot of soulful string organ arrangements, kind of like gospel. 3222 has this thumping, like, kind of triplet bouncy synthetic groove that, I'm gonna be honest, sounds like a better version of Lil Uzi Vert than actual Lil Uzi Vert. Especially when you hear how his vocals are produced in the track. So yeah, you can just listen to that instead of forcing you through however many hours and tracks of Eternal Take, the deluxe edition, or whatever. You got 4748, which kind of sounds like a very modern as hell take on like a Stevie Wonder jam, and much like the rest of the album, a lot of it is vibe and bops. I'm not sure where this ranks in the grand scheme of Childish Gambino projects. Again, it's so much of a swerve that you kind of have to let it like marinate a little bit before I can really assess it in the big picture, but I am liking what I hear for the most part. And now moving on here to the next album. You know, I'll admit I've been kind of disconnected from the metalcores for a while. It's not something I actively pay much attention to anymore, and kind of hard for me to, especially ever since stuff like Warped Tour bit the dust, so it's like, I can't just look at that lineup and determine what all the cool Hot Topic kids are listening to. But I heard, you know, through the grapevine about this one particular album, Graveview from Invent Animate, that supposedly was one of the best metalcore albums released in a while. And I took a listen to it, and not gonna lie, this is actually pretty legit. I was vaguely familiar with the name, but I never really listened to them firsthand, which is kind of amazing because they actually have a lot of similarities. If I had to pick the closest reference point possible, they sound very much like a band that I did used to pay attention to back in the day, Architects. Like, no, really, the sound is almost like in that same wheelhouse. Like, when you listen to the opening moments of the song Dark, it hits you with a lot of these hard-ass, you know, metalcore riffs with these kind of chugging patterns, but with more of a technical edge to it, especially when you listen to a lot of those chord progressions and that kind of airy kind of guitar melody that like overrides it and makes everything feel very ambient and atmospheric, even when everything underneath is just, you know, pure aggressive gnarl. Especially the drums having a lot of these really technical fills and this kind of offbeat, you know, sense of rhythm, even during some of the more breakdown laden parts. Those vocals kind of hitting that same balance of like low growls, mid-range shouts, and more soaring, ethereal melodies and everything. It finds a really great balance between a lot of that stuff, like on the song Reflection Room, which opens on these frantic blast beats and those atmospheric leads settling into its really satisfying grooves with a lot of that sweet guitar noodling. Hollow Light, driven by a lot of tapping leads, swinging back and forth between its more ambient clean parts and those massive metalcore grooves. Yeah, a lot of this riffing across the album is just really goddamn good. Shapeshifter is another real banger that definitely shows up how exceptional and technical the drum work can be from track to track, as it so tightly rides, you know, the offbeat accentuations of the riffs with a lot of these off-kilter sticking patterns to keep everything fresh and interesting. Like I said, a lot of it is like Architects, although admittedly I might prefer some more of the complexities of this album to more Architects material, to be honest. Especially when you have songs like Eden, whose guitar work switches up a lot from these low-riding hammer-on grooves, these airy tremolo riffs, squealing leads and noodling, and some more conventional chord progressions to keep the melodies and the chorus and stuff sounding nice and elegant, while also having that, you know, energetic shit to it. Just, that intro riff is just some fine, fine metalcore shit. Kind of surprised I slept on this man for as long as I did. Like, I feel like this is really some of the more distinct metalcore you could be listening to out there right now. Now, moving on to the next album here, one of the many, many shadow drops, that being Old Man Gloom, Seminar 9, Darkness of Being. Now, we mentioned this in our previous mainline episode, but just as a quick catch-up, Old Man Gloom announced that they were releasing a new album in May called Seminar 8. I forget the subtitle there. They were planning to shadow drop Seminar 9 sometime within the relative release window of Seminar 8, but they didn't really know how exactly they were going to do it, and so ultimately decided, much like many, many artists now, to take advantage of the COVID-19 pandemic and just kind of drop this at least a good 2 months before Seminar 8 was supposed to drop. So, I don't know, something like, there's some kind of sequel joke I could probably make here, but the brain is not cooperating with me right now. But, yeah, certainly an interesting time to surprise drop, and now that I've also gone back and finally listened to some of the older Old Man Gloom discography and have more of a context for what this is, yeah, this is definitely in my wheelhouse of kind of sludge with a lot of noise and doom and whatnot. The opening track, Procession of the Wounded, repeats this slow pounding 3/4 rhythm of steady drums, the super filthy lowing guitars with this subtle melodic twang mixed in with the feedback, very much in the vein of Sumac, since I know some of the members in here also played in that band as well. And even as it repeats that and loops on that idea, there's some pianos mixed in there as well into the noisy onslaught that eventually, you know, close out the track proper and feel almost kind of John Carpenter-esque when you listen to it on its own at that end part. The song Heel to Toe continues in a similar vein, although the song structure is a bit more dynamic, like with actual verses and choruses. The vocals have that really gruff quality to them, with the drums pounding out the steady groove and guitars having a bit of a nice melodic structure to them, you know, buried within all the feedback and everything. The Bleeding Sun slows down the tempo of things a bit, looping this guitar melody over top this slow, sparse mix of droning, low-end guitars and this, again, sparse drum rhythm. On the first half, at least, before ramping up to a more energetic DB-laden back half, that closes out in this, you know, kind of howling drone segment. One of the longer tracks on the album, at nearly 10 minutes, actually I think a bit over 10 minutes, Canto de Santos, opens with just kind of this random, almost kind of sounds like the band just warming up for like a good 3 minutes or so before an actual song proper kicks in, and about halfway through, you know, it gets its legs, ramps up the energy with pounding D beats and plenty of ear-splitting distortion. And that's to say nothing of the actual longest track of the album, In Your Name, at 12 and a half minutes, which brings a lot of that sludgy slowiness, that, you know, abstract noise digressions, with some oddly bluesy vibes reminiscent of, you know, quintessential era Black Sabbath amidst, you know, its more modern doom influences. It does find moments for softer passages, in particular the acoustic melodies and generally melancholic vocals of the track Death Rhymes. But overall, yeah, this album brings a nice mix of, you know, solid sludgy grooves, pummeling rapid energy, you know, dingy sludge, and just a general kind of uncomfortable, filthy ambiance to everything. I'm digging it. I cannot wait for Seminar 8, you know, the prequel. Something, Last Jedi, I don't know. Anyway, moving on to the next album here, Spirituality and Distortion, the fourth album from the avant-garde French metal madman. Once again, on Metal Blade Records. You know, you gotta love it when they reach out to that weird shit. And yeah, this is, of course, something that hits you right out of the gate with its own weirdness, as to be expected. Opening with this sitar intro on the song Down Great Desert that slowly builds into this very heavy groove of distorted guitars and drums exploding into rapid fills with bits of electronic and breakcore in there. The weirdness continues from there with Nervous Waltz opening on Baroque-era violins building into the steady, pounding triplet groove with more electronic breaks, blast beats, and even the violins themselves squealing in this very frenetic manner to match, you know, the energy of the music. Of course, can't forget those ominous choir vocals as well, because, you know, it's Baroque opera, that's what you do. As previously mentioned, the lead-off, the very first single released, Very Noise, is this brief track that mashes up these very skittering, syncopated guitar and bass, you know, riffs with this kind of breakcore drum beat and just general glitchy weirdness. It's a fun little interlude track in there. You got Hollow Tree, which, again, you know, now I think about it, a lot of songs rely on triplet grooves in particular. I wonder if that's just a thing with, like, waltz and Baroque and shit like that. But yeah, this is another grooving track with a lot of, instead of guitar, opting for more of, like, this MIDI piano thing with a lot of haughty operatic vocals and, yeah, it's another weird trip that, you know, just plain works. And, you know, speaking of shit that just works, still the best banger on the album is the aforementioned, the previously released single Parpain, the banger that features Mr. Corpse Grinder himself on the vocals, you know, bolstering those really meaty riffs and drums, and of course, that weird glitchy synth break, because, you know, who hasn't been listening to Cannibal Corpse and been thinking, you know, this guy's voice would sound great over some electronic beats? I mean, obviously Igor does, and, you know, I'm not gonna lie, it actually kind of works in a weird way. And then if you ever wanted to hear what blackened polka metal would sound like, check out the track Musette Maximum. It may not have the saxophones of something like Rivers of Nile or something, but let me tell you, hearing fucking accordions mashed up with blackened metal, it be hitting different, yo. The song Lost in Inspection gets really operatic with its vocals. It's got these sort of pulsating drum and bass style synthetic grooves, these really ominous string arrangements, and this creepy piano working over top. And yeah, this is exactly my kind of super just weird metal shit, just going over the top for its own sake, from all the elements from, you know, the metal grooves, the polka and baroque opera elements, the breakcore. This just does it for me. And did I mention that the album closer Kung Fu Chevre has some Stevie Wonder style funk as hell keyboards in there? Just feel like I should mention that. And then, of course, the last of my top picks, of course, being these two new Nine Inch Nail albums, Ghost 5 and 6. And I'll be a bit brief here, since I think Alex actually, weirdly enough, summed it up better than I actually could. So, yeah, pleasant surprise. We got well over 2 hours of new Nine Inch Nails material, continuing the Ghost series, which I still need to actually listen to, because I don't know anything about those albums, other than that's where the sample for Old Town Road came from. So, yeah, the difference is pretty distinct, starting with Ghost 5. It relies on a very sort of dramatic, but also somewhat optimistic sort of ambience. Like, it's overwhelmingly focused on, like, droning synth and keyboard melodies drawing out for long periods, with generally kind of a shimmering crystalline demeanor to it. You know, letting go while holding on and together, with Faith, which kind of has, like, a bit of a droning vocal synth in there. Some mild bleepy bloopy synths in there, and similarly, a part kind of has a simple but effective moody piano melody carrying through the synths. And to be fair, the album closer Still Right Here stands out as arguably one of the more typical feeling Nine Inch Nails songs, just because it's the only track with anything resembling like guitars or even a drum beat in there. And then you get into Ghost 6, which is definitely a lot darker, as it's driven more overwhelmingly by like actual pianos that a lot of the time play out these very haunting atonal melodies, especially on once you start off with The Cursed Clock, which is just playing creepy with its pianos. Around Every Corner continues that pattern with these occasional swells of the synths and even some brass in there, I think either saxophone or trumpets, I'm not entirely sure, with a bit of a droning guitar lead there in the back half. Speaking of horns, you get like, you know, the Worriment Waltz, which has those in the background as well. This kind of swirling, ominous, like, string and twinkling melody. This low-droning bass synth that swells into this really uncomfortable, almost panic-inducing moment. And then pure silence. Yeah, you could tell this is an album that's more anxious and preys on your anxieties in, you know, compositional form. Run Like Hell has this really ominous key and trumpet building throughout the first half, before this kind of muted drum groove enters in the middle of the song and the horns get a bit more energetic and chaotic. It definitely feels like the most film score ready track of the album, and that's definitely the best way you could sum it up in as few words as possible. Ghosts 5 and 6 definitely feel like they are extensions of the film score work that Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross do for, you know, stuff like Gone Girl or most recently the HBO Watchmen series. They definitely have their unique strengths and weaknesses. Well, I guess it depends on how you look at it. Like, if you want something that's more electronic droning with, like, a sort of relatively more optimistic vibe, then, you know, 5 is the one you probably want to listen to more. Personally speaking, I think I prefer the more dynamic, expanded instrumentation and general moodiness of 6. But that's just my opinion. At the end of the day, these are both, like, really excellent projects that showcase, you know, just how good Trent and Atticus can be when, you know, left to their own devices to just compose. In fact, I honestly wouldn't be surprised if some of this stuff originated as, like, demos and stuff for soundtrack projects that never left the cutting room floor and they just held on for later. You never know. Could always be a possibility. And now for the quick round, where I have two albums to just touch on briefly. Mirrorcore, Volcassange, admittingly not my favorite album of hers. I think I prefer Marerit much more just because it finds that sweet balance of black metal and folk. But, you know, this is a perfect, solid vibe album. You know, folk instrumentation with a very gothic, moody demeanor paired up against Amelie Bruins. Just, as always, fantastic vocal performance. If anything, listen to the album just to hear her voice. She is great. And the other quickie, that being this new Body Count album, Carnivore, just because I don't have much to say about it other than it's definitely more Body Count, you know, aggressive social commentary and just plain old tough guy posturing. Amy Lee's guest part is better than I was expecting, just because I'm not a big Evanescence guy, has been previously said, but, you know, she does well, the covers are solid, and Critical Beatdown is a fucking banger that makes me want to slam motherfuckers in the pit. Now moving on to the lowlights, of which I have two, and again, only one of them I'm bothering to touch on rather briefly. First being this new Pearl Jam album, Gigaton. All I have to say is, why did we need more Pearl Jam albums? Like, do people still pay that much attention to Pearl Jam these days? I honestly can't tell. It just kind of feels like I'm not sure why we would need this at all. It's just like, okay, you wrote some kind of vaguely country-ish rock and roll, you know, Black Keys type stuff that sounds like if you sucked all the interesting grunge moods off of the two or three albums from you that everyone gave a shit about back in the 90s. Just, eh. And then, of course, moving on to the other one, my little Uzi Vert, the bullet that I had to take here. Yeah, Code Orange underneath. I had to do my due diligence because I have to be a good listener and pay attention to what I'm sure is going to end up on a lot of year-end lists. Certainly the Melons, because he had to bust out the yellow flannel for some reason. And I just want to make something clear. I know what it's going to sound like from the tone of my voice when I discuss this album. Let me assure you, I'm not actively trying to be a contrarian here. I'm not saying that I dislike Code Orange because I'm trying to piss someone off. I actually am trying here. Like, I'm a broken record on this, but I want to make this clear for the record. Like, Code Orange is the textbook definition of a band that on paper I should like, and yet in practice I don't. Like, let's actually break down their sound, especially on their past couple of albums. Like, okay, they play, you know, metalcore. They have a lot of huge, you know, sounding breakdowns, meaty riffs, lots of noise and industrial elements. And especially in recent years, they demonstrated a certain propensity towards the moodiness of 90s alternative rock and grunge music. And you know what? I like all of those things. I'm not a prude. I jam all those shits in varying combinations quite a lot in my downtime. Anybody who's ever seen my album collection or my Spotify logs can attest to this. And yet, I try listening to this. It starts off with, like, that track, Swallowing the Rabbit Hole. By the way, it turns out that build-up thing for the music video was actually the album intro proper. And it's just, like, okay, so that stuttering drum beat in the intro and verse, and then you have the predominant riff throughout it, with just that, the way that it swells in that really annoying, squealing, digitized harmonic thing. I didn't realize digitized harmonics even was a thing. The really awkward pauses during the D-beat parts of the chorus, that melodramatic piano in the verse is just, it's a mishmash. It's not like blending flavors, unique flavors in a competent way. This just kind of feels like dumping, I don't know, a lasagna on top of a pizza. I'm kind of hungry right now. Anyway, then you get the song In Fear, which, again, has a lot of these really annoying, glitchy interruptions and riffing that, in a way, kind of feels very reminiscent, you know, since I bring up industrial, nu metal, etc., of the first couple of Slipknot albums, but then I could just go listen to those first two albums. You know, with those harmonics and that stuttering dubstep electronic beat in there, it's trying to attempt to be really intimidating, especially when you have that little creepy clean part in there, but it's like, eh. Speaking of Slipknot influence, You and You Alone is another one that's trying to ape off with those bouncy new metal grooves before midway through it, it brings industrial elements in a way that kind of sounds like a bad Three Teeth song. And I don't feel like saying that because I like Three Teeth. Shut it, Alex.
So it would sound like a Three Teeth song, okay.
I told you to shut it. I knew where you were going with that, sir. Anyway, Who Am I owes a huge debt to 90s alternative rock, since it kind of feels like a mix of, like, Korn and Deftones with some metalcore in there, and it might have been okay if it wasn't for the fact that there's just this annoyingly bizarre swell up of digital noise in the middle of the song that just fucks with the pacing of everything. And honestly, it just kind of feels like it's there just for its own sake. Cold Metal Place is a slow, sludgy tune that picks up its pace before decaying into this forced industrial ambience, and you know, maybe that's what it is for me. Like, when you listen to the weirdness of Igor or an act like that, it definitely feels all over the place, but, like, they really want to, like, be like that, and they're legit inspired. But honestly, this album, that's the word. A lot of it just feels forced. And, you know, like, it's trying way too hard. Or maybe not hard enough. I guess it depends on your perspective. By the way, speaking of which, fun little throwback here. The only song that I kind of like, that I come close to liking, is one we kind of sort of heard way before this. The track The Easy Way. And if that title sounds familiar, the lyrics and the general musical structure, especially in the vocals, are a follow-up, you know, sort of successor to the track Only One Way, which you might remember from being previously released through the Adult Swim Singles program a couple years back. Yeah, except this one definitely is coded in more, like, annoying cell dweller style industrial shit, and it's just, I don't wanna make it go away. Just let me continue listening to Vane. They know how to blend all of these elements in a way that's more satisfying. Yeah. And well, that's it for every album that mainly me listen to. There is still one project to discuss here, and, this will be, of course, a group discussion, which we haven't done in a while, and it's kind of an interesting one, because part of the impetus for the album roundups coming into existence was that, way back when, in the first year of doing this show, we all decided it would be a good idea to close out an episode by doing our first attempt at discussing an album, that being The Weeknd's Starboy. Also, because I'm pretty sure there was, like, no news that week, if I recall correctly.
Pretty much.
Yeah, so we did that. Then, of course, we did it a little bit later with a RTJ3, because, you know, that fell in all of our wheelhouses. Mm-hmm. And then we started doing this album roundup thing. And look at where we are now. So, of course, it feels fitting that all of us just happened to listen to the newest project from The Weeknd, a.k.a. professional Adam Sandler puncher The Weeknd. God, that's such a good movie. After Hours. So, yeah, it's kind of been a while since we've got a studio project from him. Last we heard of him was My Dear Melancholy, like, a couple years ago. And, okay, so I'm not sure where to start here, because I'll admit my thoughts are probably briefer on this than all y'all's are, especially Mark, because I know he did the review for the site. I'll just start off by saying this. I think I might actually like this the most out of The Weeknd's projects. Like, at the very least, it's not annoyingly long like Starboy was. And I'm one of those guys who thinks that, like, The Weeknd mainly lives or dies by the strength of his beats. Like, his lyrics and persona, I can generally, like, give or take. They don't really affect me either way. But with this album, like, it starts with a lot of, like, what you would expect with that dark, droning kind of trap R&B vibes throughout the first half, with some kind of horror-ish motifs here and there. But then once you get up to the song Blinding Light, that's when the album actually segues into a lot of synthwave production. And at that point, that's when the album starts to really work for me, personally speaking, just because the beats there are just really damn good.
Yes. I'll say myself, like, I'm sort of a, like, I'm somebody who, like, can like The Weeknd songs. Like, I'm a bit on office songs. Usually, like, I like some of Starboy and maybe his earlier work, But this is like first listen to the single, like, Blinding Lights. How come I'm interested in know about this album? And I will say, like, he's going more into that synth way, dark way tone, and even some drum and bass, some bass sounds. Like, I think the track that really got the meat the most listening to it is Hardest to Love, which I listen to that, like every time I play that song, it just really got to me every time I play a song. It's like, those are songs like, Hardest to Love. Yeah, go like that. Like I was really feeling that track was to it, and of course, that lead to the other track. I mean, that I was more hyped about, "Scared to Live." The song that of course he performed on SNL that one time, and since you mentioned Adam Sandler Puncher and his production. The production here is kind of interesting, mm-hmm. considering who was part of the team. Let me read who was part of the producing team. We have DeHella, his boy Elangelo, Max Martin, of course, as usual.
Hey, my man.
Metro Boomin, all right. Ricky Reed, The Weeknd himself, Prince 85, Oscar Holter, Kevin Parker of Tame Impala, and one Trix Point Never.
Ha ha!
Yep, looks like they actually got some work done with Uncut Gems after all.
Mm-hmm. The whole album really does sound like it fits that mold of the soundtrack of Uncut Gems, which has me thinking, going back to some of The Weeknd's earlier work, like Beauty Behind the Madness and Starboy, this album, After Hours, might just be the most consistently tight he has sounded probably ever. It just sounds like him, 103X, and Metro Boomin just got together and just crafted an 80s dark synthwave soundtrack to a movie that doesn't exist. And I want to see that movie, whether it's just, you know, The Weeknd roaming around Las Vegas high off his ass, acting like he's in Dune or something.
Yeah, shit. these most fucked up scenes in the videos, the album cover looking like is like, he looked like he done fucked up somebody. Even on the bonus edition, by the way, did I mention, even though it's sort of his, I want to say shortest track, I want to say tight track, like in shortest album in 56 minutes. Turns out, looking back at this again, and apparently they did something. The bonus, there's actually 3 more deluxe bonus tracks, and the remixes, they're their own EP, apparently, because I'm looking over this.
Gotta work the streaming metrics.
Yeah, pretty much. And most of the remixes, the remix EP isn't that bad. Like you got because about the Chromatics, alright, OPN, nice. A big movie of Heartless, alright. The Blaze remix, After Hours, and of course this SNL version of Scared to Live, which, okay, that's also a plus. Yeah. I can't think of one minus thing where it says, you know what? Hold up. Also remind myself one fact of this album. Or at least the deluxe edition, or at least the regular edition. Shit, The Weeknd has no features on here. Like, yeah. This is him, mm-hmm. throughout this whole album. Like, this is he's on the show from top to bottom. Yeah, even with the retooled deluxe edition, which, yeah, I know I get a streaming shit. Yeah, like, it's just all by him. And the remix EP, which of course you got, like I said, that's more remix. There's more pieces there, even though you had one guy that I don't want to name again. But honestly, even though I like a little bit of Starboy, or some of Starboy, I think this might be my favorite week, my favorite project is so far, because like this definitely has this definitely like got the whole dark wave 80s sound, but. But it actually got it more on a, you know, I want to say more mainstream level of sort of bit like that, but that's both appealing to a pop crowd and especially the other crowd. But yeah, this is, I was really digging this album a lot.
yeah, it's kind of where I come out on things altogether. Like, it, the highs of this album are really, really high. Like I said, everything from Blinding Lights onward are the best songs The Weeknd's done in a while. Like I said, he's a guy who lives or dies by the strength of his beats, hence why, for example, the best songs off of Starboy were the ones with the Daft Punk production. And even the first half of it, even if I may not be as into it as I am with the rest of the album, it's still got some really solid, interesting, you know, pop, R&B, trap production that works pretty well. I still think he's got a bit of an issue with length, just because, like, okay, sure, it's shorter than any albums he's released in a while, but the songs still feel like they go on maybe just a couple minutes longer than is actually necessary a lot of the time. Also, this absolutely needed way more 106.Never production. You can't just give me, like, one or two songs. It needs more.
Yeah, what's hope for more of that? And I will say, like, the repeat after me interlude, which has production for both him and Kevin Parker, which I expect to like, I expect to love, but I don't know, like, I don't hate it, I just don't, I just, it just didn't resonate with me that much. It just, yeah, just like, okay, that's fine, but I don't know, I kind of like the one, I kind of, I can deal with Metro, I got like the one OPN Metro Boom track, the final one, Until I Bleed Out, which I thought that sounded a bit better.
Oh, yeah.
Because it had that, because I knew it had that signature OPN sound, which I didn't recognize that sound, like, There's some you will hear out of Uncut Gems.
Yeah, or at least speaking good of time. Uncut Gems with this song, wink wink. I have a few other notes to make. Heartless, I have only this to say about Heartless. This song fucks so hard. Oh, it's very good, very good, very good, very good. With the crazy video that's ripped right from Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, and Scared to Live. Hey, Uzi, this is how you do an implementation.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, you just don't do the same line over and over and over again. Didn't stop you from showing up on a remix, though, but so what the hell do I know?
Yeah, that's what we're going to do. He shows us on the remix of Heartless. And apparently, like I said, there's two remixes of Heartless. The regular remix and the Vaporwave remix. Which you think, oh, Vaporwave, anyway, I like that shit. But it's like, oh, with Uzi Vert. Uzi Vert. Well, damn.
Yeah. Listen to this. Don't listen to Uzi. Because Uzi is bad. Also, I have one stray comment I want to make that isn't technically related to anything. I'm pretty sure that album cover was Adam Sandler getting his revenge. That's it. That's all I had to say on that. That sounded a lot funnier in my head. But yeah. Anyway, so yeah, Weeknd, After Hours, surprisingly solid. Go give it a listen. You know, it's not like you're doing anything else anyway. So
number
yeah,
one album for 2 weeks in a row, maybe three. Let's hope.
Yeah, good times. So that'll about do it for this brief group discussion and for the album roundup as a whole. Again, thank you for listening. If you're curious about any of these albums, as always, we have a Spotify playlist down in the description, so give that a listen. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast, Google Play and iTunes. Follow us on Twitter at SuperRezzo. Like us on Facebook, visit SuperResolution.com. Shout out to Mr. E for graciously letting me use his music for this podcast. Links to his shit down in the description. And we'll, of course, see you for more of the usual weekly trying to avoid dying of boredom from the plague or dying from the plague nonsense. So until then, peace out, everyone.